It's a short lecture coming up, please. One of which I can't see the slides. Okay, some pictures. Scrooge, people will say to you that it's not right to compare now with Dickensian times because now is so much better. It's so, people are better off, they're warm. Okay, they might complain, but it's not that bad. You know you've only got to look around London. And you can see how many people are sweeping you up. You can see how much people ask you for money as they're begging. If you look a little bit more further, you'll see that we're back to the number of prostitutes that we had in Victorian England again. And we're back to the kind of wealth that we had in Victorian England again. If you have a certain age, you tell me your postcode, I can tell you the size of your trust fund, even though you'll be trying to hide it. Let's click forward a bit, because I know you don't want much longer of a lecture. Okay, this is the end of the Dickensian period. It took until the 1890s for somebody to draw a map, Charles Booth, who drew it because he wanted to prove that there wasn't any poverty in London. And he was sick of these people who met Dickens, and he told him that there was poverty. So he measured poverty, and he found there was an enormous amount of it. The black areas on the map are labelled vicious, semi-criminal, poor. Today, they would be labelled proto-terrorist areas. Send in prevent now. We are segregating again in the way we segregated in the past. Let's click forward again. I've got 16 slides, we're going to have to click forward faster than that. Okay. you can compare places. Exactly the same place, photographs taken around 100 years later. What's the difference? Down. The difference is that the ladies in the old photographs are Chase to the edge because they don't want to be in the shit. We've built sewers, we have made things better, but our society hasn't altered that fast. Let's click forward again. That was quicker. I was involved in a paper, policy lecture, a paper in a British medical journal in the year 2000 called The Ghost of Christmas Past, where we looked at the poverty rate in 1896, and we saw it actually predicted mortality in London better in the 1990s than knowing about deprivation in the 1990s, because the long-term effects of being born into poverty are so great. These maps don't change, they all look the same. They have changed since then, because we now have gentrification. You are in gentrification central in London. London has never seen this kind of gentrification, and one thing I'll say about it, is don't think it's permanent. There's nothing safe about the housing market. If you've gone out and bought yourself a flat with a £600,000 mortgage with one bedroom, 1 minute away from here, you're in danger. You need to sell that flat quickly. Let's click forward again. Some more pictures. The Albert Bridge in Chelsea. Again, 100 years. There was this terrible tendency to think we're completely different. We've got cars. The trees have grown up. But the class system is the same, the way in which people are organised the same, and apart from that gentrification around here, the posh areas are still posh and the poor areas are still poor, and people are segregated in terms of what schools they go to, and it's getting rapidly worse because austerity means you cut the funding to the sixth forms of the state schools, you increase the fees to get in to the private schools. Incredible widening that's going on. Go forward again. Last picture, I think, almost. Again, just saying things don't change. Okay, our cover wheel's a bit bigger, but do not think when somebody says we are so much different, we are so much better, that we actually are. We have managed to revert to a level of inequality, which in terms of wealth and in terms of wages, we haven't seen since way before the First World War, and in some cases, not since Victorian times. Forward again. Anybody seen this picture? Picture came out in 1936. It's a picture to oppose austerity then, 7 years after the 1929 crash. The point it was trying to make was that all the men were stepping down. They actually were all in it together in the 1930s. Equality increased in the 1930s. But that did you no good if you were at the bottom of the ladder because you were going to drown, and people did die and drown because of mass unemployment in the 1930s. All you have to do to update that picture is put the old woman in it, find something instead of the hats, and add two noughts to the salaries. So if we go forward, now we're doing that. But there's one other important change. The man at the top is now stepping up. The best off are taking more than they took in 2008. The incomes of the best off 1% have gone up, and the wealth The wealth is a staggering thing. The wealth of the richest 1,000 people in this country is a slightly different group, 1,000. It's more than doubled since 2008. If you just took that rise and you shared that rise over every family, including the very rich, although they wouldn't notice it, if you shared the rise in the wealth of those 1,000 families, every family would be at least £6,000 better off. And they tell you that austerity is necessary because they hope that you are enumerate. Go forward again. And click one more. There we go. George Osborne, your favourite person. I would never work out when George is lying and when he is stupid. In the budget, George said that we were one of the highest taxing and spending countries in the world. So there's a little graph for you. We're in a big, thick line. You can see the naughty rise of spending by Labour. It was very naughty, because that was the rise to pay for a war. If we hadn't gone to war with Iraq, it would have been flat. Every country increases its spending to try to stop the banks completely folding. But then you can see the plans for Britain and where we're heading to be the lowest spending in Europe, apart from Ireland, that has been even more damaged than we have been because they followed our advice over what they should do with their banks. And if you're pessimistic about what's possible, just look at what all those other countries in Europe currently do and are planning to do and tell the IMF they're going to do. You can raise over half your money for public spending from the earnings that everybody else gets and shares it out. It is not a utopia. You simply have to travel on a small plane flight, not very far away, and go and see it. We are the strange country where our Chancellor says that we are one of the highest spenders. And again, if anybody can tell me, I honestly do not know whether he knows he is lying or whether he is simply stupid. And his spats, or 10 of them, also simply do not know the figures that the IMF themselves produce. Almost finished. Click forward again. Okay, you can read that if you want, but it's a way of trying to understand how unequal we've got. If you're on the minimum wage, it takes you 390 years to earn what the average FTSE boss earns in a year. 390 is easy to think, oh, it's a big number. You would have had to have started working when Charles was king, Charles I, not the one who may never be king. After 100 years, you could have read Gulliver's Travels in 1726. After another 100 years of working, you could have seen the Industrial Revolution begin in 1826. After another 100 years, you could have taken part in the general strike, which resulted in that trade union legislation, which was repealed later. And after another 90 years, if you'd saved every penny and hadn't eaten very much, you would finally have got the money that the average boss of a FTSE 100 company is getting in a year, and it's rising. These things begin to get ridiculous. My favourite plutocrat is Martin Sorrell of WPP. And if anybody would like to start a Martin Sorrell Appreciation Club, we've got rid of Bob Diamond now, we made him go over to America. Martin Sorrell's the one. Martin Sorrell's income last year was so high that you would have started off as a hunter-gatherer on the minimum wage, which makes the story doesn't really work. And of course, you'd also have been a woman, because the majority of people on the minimum wage are female. We have got to an extraordinary situation. Let's click forward again. That was the extremes. For everyday life, it doesn't look so extreme, because we're used to these really big extremes. But the average young man, working in Canary Wharf, age 28, with a slightly flash suit, almost certainly going to be sacked in 4 years' time, because they cut them, is getting the same as 11 care workers. Why is that? Why do they need so much? They didn't pay that much in the 1970s, and our banks didn't crash in the 1970s in the way they crashed in 2008. Let's click forward again. Oh, far too complicated, but in case any of you were in any doubt, we were in 2010 the fourth most unequal country in the rich world, of the 25 richest countries. We are going to win one global race. We have already overtaken Portugal. We are about to overtake Singapore, which introduced capital controls to stop the Chinese buying property and leaving it empty in Singapore. And Barack Obama has actually increased taxes ever so slightly in the US, which means by 2025, by the way things are going, we will be on the top of that chart. Somebody has to be. There will always be a most unequal country in the rich world. It's going to be us. That's why it's going to be hard, it's going to be difficult for the next 10, 15 years, maybe less if you're more optimistic, but it never stays that way for very long. And of course, there is only one way you can go from the top, and it's unsustainable. Click forward again. Some sympathy, please, for the super rich. I've already told you that they doubled their wealth in just about 5 years. You now need at least £100 million to enter the richest 1,000 families in the country. Half of them are in London. Well over half their wealth is in London. But they don't feel that wealthy, because those 10 families up there have a quarter of all the wealth of the super rich. The inequality within the super rich is greater than the inequality within the 1%, which itself is greater than the inequality within the other 99%. Do not think that they are that well organised or cohesive a group. There's more division at the top than there is in the rest of society. I think we're getting to the end. One more slide. Okay. I just happen to like this pyramid. But you have to remember, we are all human. We all have the same needs. We all have similar problems. The problems of the super rich are that they have to worry that people want to marry them for their wealth, and their children are going to lie to them at Christmas because they need that trust fund. And I don't know what kind of Christmas you want to have, but the Christmas of the super rich isn't necessarily a happy Christmas. Margaret Thatcher had got herself into the top 1%, 0.1% when she married Dennis. And what did she do at Christmas? I think 11 Christmases in a row, she invited Jimmy Savile round. It's not necessarily good at the top. But there is a difference. There is a difference. People have been studying the very, very rich. And they've noticed, when you look at them very carefully, what they do. When they're walking through the foyer of the five-star hotel, they try very hard not to look on the pavement at people like you. People who are average, people who might be slightly better off than average, they don't look, they avert their eyes, because you are their worst fear. And they do this in exactly the same way that we, very often in London, don't try and look at that sleeping bag to see if there's somebody in it, and try to avoid the eyes of the person trying to fill us that newspaper. They think of us in the same way as we think very often of people that far below us. That's how divided we've come to God. Hopefully this is my last slide. Got it? Going forward? It is. You'll be very glad to know. That's the only lecture you're going to get tonight. If you want a point of optimism, the optimism, I think, comes from what we're doing to the young and just how widespread that is right across society to everybody apart from the young who have inherited their wealth. The young are going to have to pay off the PFI. The young are going to have to pay off their student loans. If they default on the student loans, they'll have to pay it off through taxation, and they are the taxpayers. We have completely screwed the generation beneath us. If this doesn't result in a generation beneath us saying that they're not going to put up with this anymore, I don't know what will. Currently, we only have 3 years' worth of students paying the full student fee, apart from, of course, those whose parents are so rich they can pay the £9,000, £10,000 a year. That's why the student fees came in, because a small group can pay them. We only have 3 years of that now. By 2020, we'll have 8 years' worth of students, and their parents, and their grandparents, knowing that they are paying a debt they cannot control, that can be put up at any time. By 2030, these will be our first-time buyers. They won't be able to buy anything. It's coming to an end. The question isn't so much when it's going to end or how it's going to end. The question is, what do you want after it ends? Thank you very much.